Good afternoon. It is Saturday, March 10th, 2018. It is a hockey day in San Jose, and well, I guess you can go celebrate it if you're a Caps fan. Unfortunately for the Sharks, they're on the wrong end of a backup goaltender looking like a Vezina candidate. They lose 2-0 to the Washington Capitals. Welcome to the first of a day-night doubleheader for Teal Town After Dark. I am Eric Kura, rocking my old-school San Jose State jersey, of course, since it's hockey day in San Jose. We'll get to all that in a little bit later. But, of course, if you want to be a part of the show, use the hashtag TealTownUSA. You can also join us with, you know, fellow Sharks fans in the YouTube chat on the page or the app. But also make sure you're following us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, and YouTube. With me this afternoon is Chris GWS. How are you, good sir?
Hey, what's going on? I don't know if that we're still feeling the influences of that earthquakes night or whatever it was. These two soccer scores in a row.
A riveting matchup between the Earthquakes and DC United.
There was an opportunity in front.
There was a bloody chance, but they couldn't get it away. I think they had like three goalposts in the game. That's where we could just slip Mike Emmerich into it, where you could say, hit the post with the shot. All right. Well, sorry. We'll stop right there. But I'm sure
the World Cup is later this year.
That's right.
Yeah, it's 2018. Yep.
That's right. World Cup After Dark. We'll have it covered for you.
And it looks like an opportunity for...
Yeah, I don't know.
No. Soccer. All right. So let's grip it and rip it like Nicholas Backstrom did and talk about this game. And this game did start out just like the Sharks-Blues game, where the Sharks pretty much dominated the gameplay. They outshot the Shark, or the Sharks outshot the Caps 12-6 this afternoon, where the... kind of follow the game plan from what they did against the Blues. What did you think of the first?
I thought it was interesting. There's both teams are getting their chances in, and there was a lot of back and forth. I think overall the Sharks got the better of the two, but there weren't that many really, really dangerous chances.
Yeah, they didn't get many. I would say they got good chance. They got chances, but they weren't good. Be that as it may, they definitely, and like Felix just says in the chat, Sharks couldn't catch a break today. Other, questionable, where we'll get into. Was surprised they didn't. Yeah, we will get into that right now as the second period comes into play here, where the freaking Capitals come on strong to begin the period, and at one time out shot the Sharks 10-1. The overall stats were 12-3 in favor of the Capitals, and Nicholas Backstrom with a slapper that beats Martin Jones. I think he got a little bit of a piece of it with a minute 28 left in the period. Obviously, this is the thing that everybody's going to be talking about a little bit in the regards to that it was a controversial goal in that sense, because they were, was it onside? Was it not onside? What did you think, Chris?
Based off of all the freezes I saw, I would say it was probably offsides, and you might have been able to win that, but apparently the one time in his life Peter DeBoer didn't feel like challenging a goal as offside, it was, you probably could have won it. Yeah, funny how that works.
Right? It's one of those weird things that it's like, okay, PDB, you've been known to make a challenge before, and you don't do it this time. It's quite interesting. Even Randy Hahn tweeted earlier that they were questioning whether or not it was offside, and he even said that they thought they made a good – successful that they didn't do it. So yeah, I'm kind of surprised by that. So we'll see. But shoot, I mean, you would hate to have a controversial call go against the Sharks in this sense, though. I mean, because
I would rather have a controversial call go against us and actually try to challenge it, because that looks like one that would have been worth challenging. Because I know there's some people who whinge any time a goal gets challenged offside, as if the possibility is not, you know, even worth discussing. But it's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
The Sharks didn't get on the board the entire game, regardless. And I don't. I was watching the Caps. They weren't content to just sit on that one goal. They were still going after. It wasn't like it changed the dynamic where suddenly they could go into a defensive shell. This is not like the 2008 Nashville Predators or something. This is still the Capitals. You can still score on them when you're down a single goal. So that's where it's like it's controversial, but the Sharks did not score one goal against a backup, against a team that is decent defensively, but is not some defensive monster. You know, this isn't 2008 Nashville or, you know, Minnesota from a number of years ago where they had four men in their defensive zone for everything. This is a team you can score against. So I don't buy it as much of an excuse. You have to do more.
Yeah, and it's a season sweep for the Capitals, I would say, since the Cal Palace days.
I was going to say, does Uncle Darren have a number on that yet? Because, you know, I mean, the Sharks owned the Capitals for like a good decade plus, so I don't even know the last time they did that.
Uncle Darren said that tonight's... Damn it. Shit.
Oh, no, he did it.
Oh, I was trying so hard.
Good job, Billy Corgan.
Yeah, no, today's game where the Washington Capitals beat the Sharks, October 30th, 1993, according to at Shark Stats in on Twitter, that's Uncle Darren Stevens, it was the seventh ever regular season home game at San Jose Arena that they won this game. And that's just crazy. So...
David B. Pilot in the chat disagreeing with me. I'm not saying the call doesn't matter at all. I'm just saying the Sharks need to have scored somewhere in there. Like, yeah, maybe they could have gotten into a 0-0 OT, but this is not a team that's impossible to score against. And it just, yeah, I don't buy it that 60 minutes with no scoring, it's not the reason why they lost. They needed to do more offensively. There's a few guys specifically that I will call out that I think were very lackluster offensively. And there's a number of other things strategically, like how they entered the zone. I think the Sharks made a lot, you know, they dug their own grave in many ways today.
Yeah. And you know, we'll talk about the power play again. I mean, yeah, they got one against the Blues.
Hallelujah.
But now they're 1-for-32. I'm sorry, and I've been preaching this, you know, and I will preach it until it gets better. If your power play is going to act like that, be ready to get your head bell rung, because they're going to take liberties on you come playoff time.
In the playoffs, though, they call less penalties anyways when they are fully justified. So there is no data to support the idea that it actually deters people from taking liberties. It just actually doesn't.
My thinking, though, is that if the team is struggling so badly that they're like, they're not going to do anything on the power play, we can hit them a little harder and make them pay even further. But that's my thought on it. And one of the things I allude to that is that iffy, you know, shot by Tom Wilson on Evander Kane in the second period. What did you think of that?
I didn't have any really strong opinions on it. I mean, it was iffy, like you said. But, you know, I don't know. Again, I think a lot of this came down to the Sharks' offense being ineffective more than the Capitals taking liberties. Even the power play, despite the fact that they went 0-for on the power play today, I don't buy that that's why they lost, because you know, just to go into it a little bit now, I'm looking at the numbers 5-on-5, and I see certain guys, Chris Tierney, Donskoy, and Meyer being three prime candidates where they started the vast majority of their non-neutral zone shifts in the offensive zone, and they all got buried in terms of shots for, shots against while they were on the ice. They're spending the majority of their time, they're being given prime shifts. They're being given good starts. They're being given opportunities to do stuff, and they did very little. Then there's the offensive zone entries where how many times did you see four guys stacked up right at the blue line, challenging to meet them at the blue line, exactly. They try to skate it in, and it gets turned over, and it goes right back the other way. Like, there were times the other way, too, where they shouldn't have chipped it in when they did chip it in, even though there were guys back. Like, there's a reason why teams chip it in sometimes and why they skate it in sometimes. And they seem to be making all the wrong choices. I haven't seen, you know, the numbers for zone entries usually get posted a couple days after by a few people who track these things and, you know, skated in versus dumped in and what the results were. But this was something that frustrated me all day long, is watching how often Tierney would be one of the culprits, and there were a couple other culprits too, who would try and skate through two guys when you should have thrown it behind them. I don't know much about the Capitals goalie. Maybe he's some legendary stick handling goalie, but I sure didn't see that. I don't know why they seem so afraid to chip it in when there were four guys stacked up at the line, or when, you know, the defensemen were coming up right to meet them at the line. Throw it behind them, make them turn around, make them go 200 feet as opposed to feeding the rush back the other direction to getting an opportunity. So I felt like the Sharks dug their own grave almost all day long.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the Capitals knew what they were going to do. So good game tape management on their part, because they just kept going back and forth, and it's just like, oh, what are you doing? You know, there were the times where you knew the drop pass was coming, and they've been trying to do that a lot lately, and it's like,
everything in NHL in the chat are resident Capitals fans saying, oh, yes, that he is a good stick handler, but by no means legendary. LMAO. Well, yeah, no, I figured as much. I believe Dan Rusinowski also said on the radio he's the second ever German goaltender to get a win in the league. So, yay, one for us Germans.
Very nice. As Park German, I can attest to that. So, that's a good one. You know, Davalo saying, you know, they really didn't move the puck. Tierney wasn't moving his feet. I noticed Tierney not in the game. The players are the guys who ultimately are responsible for offense and defense. Oh, yeah, of course, from M. Hackle.
Tierney, honestly, is quietly, he has like the quieter version of the Burns syndrome of giveth and taketh away, because he does some great things, and he does, you know, he has some maddening turnovers, and some, you know, it wasn't as much today, but sometimes he thinks he's Joe Thornton where he tries to make a crazy pass when he should just shoot. But he's not quite to the extreme of Burns with giveth and taketh away, but I've noticed that about him, that he can do some great things, but he can make some maddeningly bad choices at times too, or, you know, not take the shot when it's there, not try to drive the puck in as opposed to skate it in. Those types of things. And, you know, today I think was that was on display in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Bearded Shark Sky 661. Hey Tyler, how are you? Good to have you in here. The Sharks are reverting back to last year's and 2015 mistakes, being very transparent about their moves, and opponents are reading it like a children's book.
I don't know if I go that far, but I know what he's saying. That definitely, I think part of it is that, you know, they've undergone a lot of changes this year without Marlowe, with Thornton being out, and trying to avoid having dry spells. I think Kane is given some life, but also, you know, there's an adjustment period there. He's going to have some great games, but he's probably going to have some rough ones. And they're a team in transition very much, so they're going to have dry spells. And I guess the good thing is when they've scored one goal in two games, they managed to win one of those games.
Yeah, and they've been on the, especially early in the year, they've been on those 3-2, 2-1 ends, you know. But sometimes they just have a reversal of fortune with you in these games. Martin Jones, 24-25 tonight, including that nice breakaway stop after Tierney turned it over on Ovechkin. What did you like from him this afternoon?
I mean, he made all the stops he is supposed to make. He gave them a chance. Like I said, the defense and goaltending were not the problem today. The problem was the offense not getting anything on the board. I think some of it was luck. Some of it was, they minimized their own opportunities at times. But overall, I can't complain about how Jones played. Like, if he only lets in one goal out of, I think, 24, 25 total shots that were thrown his way, I mean, that's above 95%. Mm-hmm. If your goaltender is above 95%, then he's probably not the reason why you lost.
Yes. And to those St. Louis fans out there giving crap to Jake Allen, look at the goal support he's got too, for that matter. So we missed a question in the chat from Felix. Does the power play miss Jumbo at all? Curious to ask your thoughts on that.
Miss? What do you think? I would think not necessarily miss as much as it's fine. It's kind of, it's had an identity built around him for over a decade. So, and they're already needing to retool that anyways, even with him in the lineup, but now even more so, and they have to retool the identity. And I think it's going to take a while. I mean, if you had to describe how the Sharks power play is, nicely, there isn't really, there isn't much to go on yet. We don't know what it's going to look like for the next 5 years because we really don't know, but I mean, we knew what it looked like for the last 10 because it was built around a couple of very specific guys and it was very effective for most of that decade. And it's in transition. So it was going to be in transition regardless, but now it has to be in transition. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not really an answer, but that's my best. Sorry.
I would kind of agree with Chris on that. There might be some used to things with the Sharks and Jumbo and in years past even more so. So
I guess I would say there is one thing it is definitely known for. It's known for Burns getting it at the point and throwing at the net pretty much no matter what. There could be five guys all lined up directly or four guys lined up directly in front of a shot, he'll still throw at the net.
Exactly. And the one thing I said on the other night, on I think it was against the Blues, was I was looking at old footage because I had nothing else to do because I'm in my room and stuck here for a bit, and I was looking at one of the games against Nashville in 2016, and Burns was moving a lot more in the power play as he was throwing those pucks on net. So I'm wondering if they can get him out of that little corner that he's at would help. It would be beneficial. Might throw some people's games off. You don't want to have that predictability for that matter either.
Well, then this is something I said a couple years ago, or it was right after, I think it was not even a couple years ago. It was about a year and a half ago or so. When the power play struggled, you saw, as opposed to most of the best power plays where you see a pretty, you look at heat map of the best power plays, the top of the zone will have a pretty dark color. They're throwing pucks from all over the top of the zone. If you look at the Sharks power play last year, you saw one huge dark spot where Burns likes to sit, and the rest was pretty middle colored. So they were throwing entirely too many pucks from one place. What he needs to do is he needs to get better at faking that shot where he gets that defender. Because the defenders, the minute he gets at the point, whatever defender's there is going down to try and block the shot and then get an opportunity going the other way. That is a guarantee. He needs to get better at making them go down, pulling over, then actually throwing it through. As he needs to kind of mix it up a little bit more. That way, make defenders pay for committing to that block. Because you see it. Like before he does anything, the second the puck is on its way up there, that defender's going down on one knee, getting into his shot lane. No, they know exactly what he's going to do. And that's where he's to mix it up enough to where, if you want to just assume that that's what's going to be, because you assume it's basically telegraph, then make them pay for that. Make them like, okay, well, you're not going to be in the shot lane. You're going to be down one skate, and you're not going to be as useful to your team.
Yeah, like like Kurt Russell as portraying Herb Brooks in Miracle, you always want to have options in plays. And it just seems like it's gotten a little stale and people are catching on to it. And that's where, you know, you're going to have these struggles. So, but the worst part is that near the end of the game, Burns takes a puck to the mouth. I mean, thank goodness it wasn't Logan this time. Hopefully Burns is okay and will be okay to go.
I assume Monday. It's probably okay because it would have a hard time hitting the two or three teeth he has left. the puck is pretty big. It's about yay big. I don't know. As long as it didn't hit the right side of the mouth, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, luckily for him, I think he's just said, screw it. I'm not going to get any teeth put back in until I'm done playing because what's the point?
Yeah, I completely agree. Everything in NHL. Also, Oshie has not been the same since Thornton stuck his butt into Oshie's head since last. Yeah. Yeah, Oshie, and then granted, I don't follow the Caps all the way around, but Oshie's been not himself. But
Oshie's had quite the history with Thornton too. Like that was the second time there's been an odd thing where it definitely has affected Oshie long term. I'm wondering, you know, I remember years ago when I think it was 2011 when Thornton took a very questionable at best hit high on Oshie, mm-hmm. where he was out. I think he was out for almost a season or something. Like he was not. It took him so long. It felt a lot. It makes me think of a lot of like when Dan Boyle was out for an extended period of time, came back, and then told years later about how like we all saw it. We could see he wasn't himself when he was back. He was a shell of himself. Screw you, Maxim LaPierre. But we could see at that time Boyle was a shell of himself when he came back. We're like, man, I'm rooting for him, but he is not look. He's like the Dan Boyle of a year ago, even just, and I think, you know, one more thing that may have contributed in part to that eventual collapse at the end of that season, you know, it was mm-hmm. a lot of things, the Vlasic injuries, this, but that was one is that Boyle wasn't really Boyle after that hit. And I wonder, you know, I don't know. Oshie seems to have those reoccurring issues.
Yeah. Which is scary because he is a phenomenal player and, to not have him be 100% is not a good thing for Washington. I want to welcome all of those who were watching Brody and Curtis without suits.
Hey now.
To Teal Town After Dark. Of course, it's what we call Afternoon Delight. Make sure you hit that subscribe button and also hit that bell that notifies you when we are jumping online. A quick programming note. Because it is hockey day in San Jose, we will have a Barracuda After Dark following the Barracuda and Monsters. And if you saw Kevin's After Dark last night, this game should be very dynamite. They were going after players like crazy. And the Monsters aren't exactly the greatest team in the AHL. And the Barracuda won 6-2. If you're in the San Jose area, I believe some tickets are still available at $10. In fact, they're having a street rally right now outside the Shark Tank. So go ahead and check that out. But we'll have a Barracuda After Dark following Barracuda and Monsters. But kind of want to jump into this topic that Brody brought up on pregame, Chris, was a NorCal hockey bucket list. I don't know if you were able to see the pregame show today or the Twitter missions.
I saw bits and pieces. I didn't see a lot of them because I'm usually, I was telling you, yard work and all that on the weekends. But
lucky you.
Do fill in though, because I get the idea, but I'll let you go.
Yeah, no, he had some ideas, and you know, I would love to have Brody on to talk about this because it's something I really want to bring up on an After Dark or just a Teal Town Live. But let me see if I can pull this up here on the Twitter machine.
So I assume if we're talking bucket list, basically we're talking about what, you know, what things would you want to do for California hockey, or what, you know, what events or those type of things? Is that the gist of it?
That's the gist of it. And here's what he came up with. You know, first locally born NHL star. Yes, we can, as much as we joke about San Ramon native Austin Matthews, we can't completely take credit because he quickly moved to Arizona after that. Matt Tennyson is probably the most well-known junior shark to play in the NHL. Of course, today, Brooks Orpik was born in San Francisco, played for the Capitals.
And he's terrible.
And he should feel terrible.
Yeah, he's bad and he should feel bad.
Yes. Copyright hockey jerk. Cal and Stanford are a part of the Pac-12 with at least 6 D1 hockey programs. I would love college hockey to thrive out in California. It would be great. Of course, we all know about San Jose State Ice Hockey. I did a number of years for them as their graphic designer. And they are a club program. If you're ever able to jump over to Solar for America Ice, I think they start like in late September and play through February. I think right now their club hockey championships are going on actually this weekend. Multiple places to watch hockey. I think many people can complain about maybe outside of San Jose, trying to find with the game on with the sound up. You know, I mean, Stanley's is great, you know, and all those fun things, but you know, for like me, I'm out in Concord. It's tough to go anywhere except for your house to watch the game and have people do it. Major ice facilities and youth programs in every Bay Area county. This one's my pet peeve, and I think Brody lives somewhere in Contra Costa County, as do I. And the problem here is that Alameda County has the Oakland Ice Center. It also has Dublin Iceland. Santa Clara County, you already have Sharks Ice, among others, including, you know, the Sharks Ice in Fremont. The Peninsula has a couple, Redwood City, the Foster City Rink, thank goodness, is still around. I know even the city has Yerba Buena Gardens, along with Santa Rosa, which is one of my favorite rinks, the Snoopy's Home Ice. That's one of my thing. Contra Costa County doesn't have one, and it's missing out big time. Even Solano County has one in Vacaville. Of course, the parade in San Jose, that's something we all wish we could have.
Didn't technically we have one after that first playoff series?
No, I was about to say we did have a parade already in San Jose following, you know, the first playoff run for the Sharks. So Chris, I mean, granted, I know you're in San Diego now, but what would you say that you could add on to that NorCal hockey bucket list?
So I'll get to that in 1 second. First, there's a couple comments in the chat I want to read and off and or address. You know, Mike Neva saying people in the Bay Area don't even care about Cal or Stanford basketball or football. I don't see hockey happening. Oh, actually, I would disagree. There's not like the ravenous support of some markets for their college teams, but there's definitely excitement around Stanford football. There's definitely excitement around the basketball. I mean, you can find both on the radio. So clearly there's a market for those things. Bearded Sharks guy saying hockey wasn't so damn expensive, made the growth of the game be greater. I agree. I think, I mean, this is one of the challenges of hockey's growth, is that you either have to be from a market where it's just so ubiquitous, or you have to have money. And that's the thing, is that's one of the reasons why I didn't play more when I was younger, is that it's expensive. I mean, just, mm-hmm. you know, the gear, the ice time. It's not like basketball where all you need is a ball and you can go down to the park and play with a hoop. You know, it's not, you know, baseball and football a little more tricky because you need more people, but still a lot more doable. Hockey is definitely just inherently expensive. Yeah. And Felix pointed out, yeah, there's Sharks Ice in Fremont. Technically, that is actually Alameda County, I believe. That's actually not Santa Claus.
That's true. I'm sorry. You know why I say that is because the junior team there is the Santa Clara Valley Blackhawks. That's where.
And they're really, really, really close to being in Santa Clara County. I mean, it's a technical thing. I didn't realize until a couple of years ago that Fremont was actually Alameda. I didn't even know that until my wife pointed out to me. Anyway, so on for the bucket list, I don't know. I mean, I think that most of that is good stuff. I mean, part of it is just, I think, just generally growing the game. I don't know if it'll ever take root here quite the same. Because I said, like, most sports here don't take root quite the same way they do, like, on the East Coast. California has definitely got more diverse interests, I would say. Like, there's a lot more things going on. There's a lot, you know, it isn't like we don't have a winter here where you can't go out and go to the beach and do all kinds of things. So I don't know if it'll ever be able to take root quite the same, but I would say another outdoor game would be awesome, not just the one. We have the All-Star game coming. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be quite interesting.
Oh, yeah. Bearded Sharks are saying, you know, Division 5 Adult League here in Santa Clarita is 570. Yeah, no, I believe I played enough hockey. I have a pretty good idea of how dang expensive it is. I mean, part of it is also it's donations and getting, you know, for, you know, to be able to have kids leagues where, you know, kids who are not from affluent families actually have a chance to play and try it out and maybe find that they really enjoy the game. And that's the tricky part. I was also remember I read probably 5 years ago or more that Sharks Ice was either the biggest facility on this side of the Mississippi or the second biggest facility. I don't know if that's still true or not.
Yeah, I believe it's still the biggest west of the Mississippi.
So. Okay, yeah, because I'm not sure if how technical they're being, because I know of several big facilities in Minneapolis, and well, given that the river runs right through the middle, I don't know how technical we're being if it's just on the west side of the river versus, you know, do we consider it not west of the Mississippi since it's right on the, I don't know. Technicalities, these things keep me up at night.
Oh boy. Yeah, no, it's one of the busiest facilities, I would think, on at least, I think it was like the busiest hockey or ice rink facility west of the Rockies, I think, was also the ones that they mentioned, because I mean, that rink is open up at 6 a.m. and they're playing till like 12:30 in the morning, and there's nonstop.
I mean, it's basically going almost around the clock. Yeah. Cause I mean, I've been to early games there. I've been to extremely late games there. I mean, what they have maybe 4 or 5 hours during, you know, in the 24 hour span where it's not something going on there.
Right. And it's crazy, you know, and that's when they expanded to Sharks Ice, Solar for America Ice. Yes. My bad. It started out as a two rink facility, and it just started getting more and more busier. Of course, it helped with the success of the Sharks growing the game there, where they built the third rink that's exclusively, or I wouldn't say exclusively, mainly for the Sharks. And even then, that was getting crazy, and it grew to four rinks. And I think there was even talk that they would potentially want to grow it to even more, maybe 5 or 6.
I've heard talk of expansion. I think I don't know off the top of my head. I think they own some space where they could expand there already. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of, I assume it would be the financials and is it worth the money and the time and the effort? You know, is it going to pay back to expand even more? It wouldn't surprise me if it would. I mean, mm-hmm. seems like, yeah, they're busy there constantly. I mean, even more than they were 10 years ago. You know, most of the time I played there was about 10 years ago, and it was busy when I was there, but it's even busier now, like just a lot busier.
Yeah, and when I played junior hockey, we didn't have many rinks. We had Berkeley, Oakland wasn't finished yet. They had just opened up the then named Ice Center. You also had the Eastridge rink going. You had Redwood City and Belmont and Santa Rosa and Stockton and Sacramento. Those were pretty much all the rinks you had going. Now, I mean, alone at Solar for America Ice, you have four. So that's great.
So,
and mind you, whether you think this is interesting or not, I guarantee you this is something that the Sharks executives are paying very close attention to, because nothing grows the, you know, nothing grows the game quite like having more people play it, because it is honestly the sports I identify with the most are easily the ones I've actually played. Like, I don't identify with soccer much because I haven't played soccer since I was very, very young, but I played all the other major American sports quite a bit, even into being an adult. And that's something that, you know, they have to pay attention to, because they know if there's kids who play it, kids will understand it better. They'll like it better. They'll watch it. They'll, you know, that's how you build up your fan base. Mm-hmm. And it's a part of it, I should say.
No, exactly. And Mike Nevis in the chat, I think if high school started to have more hockey, that'd be a huge boost. I think Santa Rosa has high school. They do. Santa Rosa is one of the many high schools that have it. Bellarmine, who I've designed jerseys for, has it. I think Valley Christian.
Yeah, Valley Christian does. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of them do now, which is great.
Unfortunately, the majority of the ones that have, actually, I think nearly all the ones that have hockey are all pretty much private schools, where, you know, it costs a crap ton to send your kids there.
So yeah,
it's not you know, your average kids that are getting to play it. It's kids with parents with a lot of money.
Yeah. Kevin Lacey has tweeted me something because of the success, and here's talk about growth of the game, the Barracuda being here. You better believe there's a line to get into the San Jose Barracuda game already. It's already wrapped around one whole side of the building. Of course, they are giving away to the first 4,000 fans the Barracuda black jersey. So that might play a deal, but also the price point, you know, there it is, folks. I would love for them to have to take some of the freaking tarps down for the game today, which would be great. So that game's at 5:30 if you want to check that out. But Chris, I think it's time to go around the league.
To wrap around the league, you say?
Yes, the NHL wrap around.
Ah, yes. Swing for the chat to see if there's anything else they think we should call it. Do we have intro music for this?
No. The last couple of games, everybody's been calling it the NHL wraparound.
Well, that's boring. Okay, I know Laurel suggests is an interesting thought, because I know we're on the dawn of game 69 on Monday, I think. She suggests possibly calling it the reach around. I don't get it. I don't either.
But game 69, that's hilarious.
Yeah, no, this is game 68. Boring.
Yeah, God. Should have had a salute to Yammer Yager for this game. Anyway. So the scores so far, there are a lot of early games today. In Beantown, in an original six matchup, so the referees called it fairly evenly. The Bruins beat the Blackhawks 7-4. The Bruins had a 4-goal third period to come back to beat the Hawks. Krejci with 2 goals. Pasternak gets on there. One of the Nashes, because it's either Riley or Rick Nash, scored a power play goal. And Sean Corrali, former Sharks prospect that we traded in the Martin Jones trade, got the empty netter as the Hawks go down 7-4 to the Bruins in a shootout. The Vegas Golden Knights, my God, 93 points on the campaign. They win it 2-1. Marc-Andre Fleury, could we be talking Vezina for him?
So they're pretty much right with 93 points. So I found, you know, looking at numbers, you know, how much I love numbers.
Yes.
94 points is basically the magic number. If you get 94 points in a given season, almost any year, your probability of making the playoffs is like 98%. So basically, well, I mean, a shocker, they're probably going to make the playoffs.
Right.
At this point, it would be a shocker if they did not.
It would be a catastrophic collapse like an expansion team would normally have.
And it would take all the teams behind them like just going nuts. So probably not going to happen.
No, completely. Speaking of another team on fire, Tampa Bay wins it 3-2 in a shootout. Tyler Johnson, Nikita Kucherov get the goals in regulation. Lekkonen and Galchenyuk get goals for Montreal.
And by the way, that was game 69 for the Lightning.
No.
One of the editors from their the blog, I think it was Raw Charge, was saying, the Lightning win game 69. Send me your nice gifts now.
But Chris, hey, I got a question for you. Do you know who the goalie was for Montreal tonight? Today?
Shoot, you did it again. Was it I'm trying to find this one probably deep down the bottom of the sea, Finding Nemo.
Oh, good job. Very nice. Nemo was in that. Now, granted, he's had a good run lately with Montreal now that he's settled in with the Canadians, but he does get the loss for Montreal in this one. In Philly, the Flyers score 2 goals in the middle frame to beat the Winnipeg Jets 2-1. Patrick Laine does pick up his 40th goal in the season. The loss goes to Connor Hella Buck for Winnipeg. In Colorado, the Avalanche take down the Coyotes. Desert Dogs 5-2. As Jonathan Bernier picks up the win as the Colorado Avalanche go to 80 points in the campaign as we get into a tighter race in the Western Conference. In LA, they played the Sharks and only had 16 shots on goal that game. In LA today, the Blues had 17 shots in the first period. They beat the Kings 7-2. Bertuzzo, Perienko, Petrangelo, Barbashev, Tarasenko, Brodziak, Schwartz. I like to select a Z, please, because there's so many Zs with those players going on there.
Yeah, you think Yo ripped them a new one after that loss?
Oh, I think he did. Maybe he did a Glenn Gullicks and then threw his stick into the stands while he was at it, too. Along with the Sharks losing 2-0 to the Capitals. Those are the games that are final. Currently in progress, the Leafs and Penguins are scoreless about 5 minutes in. Same thing with the Rangers and Panthers. They're under 7 minutes into the game. Rangers already have 7 shots to the Panthers 1. And then 2 more games on the schedule.
On the docket.
On the docket, yes, absolutely the docket, as New Jersey will be in Rocketville to take on the Predators. That starts off at 5 p.m., and then the Wild and Oilers will be the nightcap on Hockey Night in Canada. That starts at 7 p.m., of course. As we said, the Barracuda play at 5:30. Apparently, get in line now.
And there will be a post game after that on here as well. For yes. Y'all to check out.
Yes.
I assume that'll be you and did you rope in Hockey Jerk?
I'm hoping to rope in Hockey Jerk or Kevin Lacey. Maybe they'll do a check-in and then come in as I break it down and then catch up. After that, that would be great.
Yeah, if Hockey Jerk can't make it, he's bad and he should feel bad.
Absolutely. He should feel bad if he can't make it. Darn it. Yes. Yes, Rob, technically after dark.
Yeah, I mean, really, this isn't, well, I mean, unless you're down here where it's stormy and gloomy, it isn't really after dark currently. So I guess it would be, this is like after dark minus one, and that'll be after, you know, after dark proper.
Yes, for cheesy, per cheesy. All right. So in case you missed anything or you want to watch this again, check us out on TealTownUSA.com. Or your favorite podcatcher, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, or YouTube. You can check us out on the website or get us on your favorite podcatcher, whether you listen to podcasts at. So, Chris.
And you really should.
You absolutely should. And definitely subscribe down below on the YouTube channel. We are at 644.
6:44. Do I hear 6:45? 6:45. 6:45.
You get 6:40.
And it goes to the gentleman with the Sharks jersey.
Oh, excellent! Thank you so much. Yeah, no, we started this little shindig with only what, 5 people following, you know, watching us, and maybe 3 of that was actually us watching ourselves.
It was probably 4 out of 5, but
You know. And then 2 years ago when we got to the cup final, we were at 250. I would love to get to the playoffs and get to 750. That would be awesome.
Laurel, see you 6:45, 6:45. Okay. Awesome. Yo, do I hear 6:47? Nice. Anyways.
So tell all your friends, tell them when we do this after every game. I believe we are at like 260 something in consecutive games. So definitely check us out. Chris, final thoughts on where the people can find you on the social.
Okay. Final thoughts is the Sharks are definitely in a scoring slump right now. Hopefully they don't lose too much ground. I mean, they are still in a playoff spot. They managed to hold on to that. Mm-hmm. Not by much, but, you know, it's still interesting. There's, I think, after today, there are now 14 games left. So there's a pretty darn good chance they can make the playoffs at 81 points. That means realistically they need another 12 to 15 to likely get in, maybe a little bit more than that, but it's very doable. They need to be a little bit above 500 and they'll probably make the playoffs. So it'll be interesting no matter what happens. If you actually want to hear what I have to say, I don't know why you would, but you can find my terrible tweets on Twitter at ChrisJWS and pretty much every other social media, same handle.
I completely concur. You should check his Twitter out. He has some great witty insight.
Half the time it's just me complaining about things like, you know, earlier at the grocery store, I was like, so when I see these lines that say 15 items or less and I see the people in them, I'm like, do they not either? Is it because people don't know how to read or it's because they don't know how to do math or both?
Or
I don't know. That's thoughts like that you can get on my Twitter feed.
Or they don't give a crap and try to sneak in anyways.
Yeah, no, I see people with entire cartfuls like 15 items or less.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Gotcha. You can always follow me at PuckGuy14 on the Twitter and Instagram. My final thought is you'll get to see more of me later on for Barracuda After Dark. So check that out. But overall, Sharks, let's get some scoring going. We don't need to get fancy. We do need to get creative and we need to get out and make sure we win some hockey. Of course, on the Sharks side, we will be back with you following the game on Monday night. Sharks and Red Wings, the classic rivalry, absolutely classic rivalry. We'll be back for you then. Also, we'll be back after the game tonight between Barracuda and the Monsters. That just sounds weird. I don't know, but that's minor league hockey for you. So until then, we will see you later this evening and on Monday night. Keep it real. Keep it teal. Keep it real teal. See you later this evening.